folks, and welcome back to NTI's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima again, and this podcast was brought to you, among others, by Emil Gorgis, a Tokyo real estate agent who specializes in serving international or mixed nationality families looking for the perfect family home. So Emil's an Australian. He's been living here in Japan for the past 2 decades, 8 years of which he's been actively buying, selling, and managing real estate properties in the city on behalf of his own family and a great many happy clients. And he also acts as a mortgage broker on behalf of his clients. So his company has a dedicated loan officer in many of the Japanese mega banks. And if you're a regular listener, you probably already know him from our JREP, the Japan Real Estate Experts panel sessions. So you're probably already aware that the man is an absolute fountain of wisdom on all things related to real estate in Japan, and in particular to family homes, the greater Tokyo metropolitan area, and mortgages. And most importantly, he's incredibly generous with his time and advice, which he's more than happy to provide at no cost or commitment to anyone asking. So if you've been thinking about buying your home in Tokyo, but you've been sitting on the fence for a while, or if you just want to have a chat in English with a real expert, drop him a line on emil.gorgis, that's emil.gorgis, emil.gorgis@tokyorealty.jp. Hit him up today and start exploring your options. All right. And today, as promised, introducing our brand new JREP panel member, Blanca Kobayashi, Vice President and Co-Founder of ARC Reform, which is a bilingual renovation and design company based in Tokyo. I'll let her introduce herself and the company in her own words, but obviously a super worthy addition to the panel since the topic of renovations, repairs, and rebuilds does come up time and time again in our discussions, as well as in your questions to us in the various channels you're tuning into the Japan Real Estate Podcast and Show from. So we talk about exactly these topics today and many more in this first session. What exactly is the difference between a renovation and a rebuild? When can a rebuild be done legally and what it includes? What permits and approvals are required for various types of work done? And we also talk about redesigning and reshaping home layouts, so opening up smaller rooms into larger open spaces, installing insulation in Japanese homes, the differences in cost of renovations done on wood versus reinforced concrete or mixed material structures, how to renovate a short-term space for maximum profitability, and some other off-topic stuff like renting spaces for photo shoots and other commercial purposes, the relocation of refugees and potential for revitalizing rural areas, countryside living, mandarins, mushrooms, goats, and the usual stuff that tends to come up whenever Matt Ketchum joins our conversation. So please give a warm welcome to Blanca Kobayashi, our brand new member of JREP, the Japan Real Estate Experts panel. Enjoy the conversation, and I'll see you again on the other side.
Okay, Ziv, you can kick off.
All right, okay. So we're back with the Japan Real Estate Experts panel, JREP. And we've got a special guest on today, but before we introduce her, we'll just do a quick round of introductions of the usual suspects, because ours is way shorter. So go, Tracy.
Thanks, Ziv. So I'm Tracy. I am the Minpaku specialist. I've been doing short-term rentals in Tokyo for the last 10 years. I have also started up a consulting company, so I help people maximize their profits and get booked in a crowded market without discounting. How's that for an expert statement?
That's brilliant.
It's well practiced. So, Matt, you're up next.
Yeah, I'm Matt. Matt Ketchum is my full name. I'm one half of Aki and Inaka, which is a real estate consultancy that specializes in all of those abandoned houses and bowling alleys and farms. And there's bowling alleys. There used to be one for Aki. I don't know if it's still there because I haven't gotten a request for it, but they exist. So we help people find the viable options amongst all of the very much not viable options out there in rural Japan. And that's nationwide too, so not just within Tokyo. But yeah, so if you want a cheaper house, come at us.
Awesome. And I'm Ziv Nakajima again, and I do investment properties and holiday homes anywhere in Japan, whether the buyer is a resident in Japan or living overseas. We can handle everything: purchase, management, sale, We do everything on their behalf. And Blanca, give us the spiel.
Yes. Hi, guys. Thanks for having me. I'm Blanca Kobayashi, and I'm the co-founder of Arc Reform, which is newly founded renovations company in Tokyo and in Chiba. And we offer bilingual services, which is one of our specialties. We basically help not only the Japanese speaking clientele, but foreign clientele to understand everything about the renovations and what can be done, what cannot be done. We also create customized furniture for businesses. We actually do the whole setup of businesses. So if anybody wants to open an office, store, a restaurant, and they are getting the business, you know, in Japan, it's often a skeleton. So if you get the skeleton, there's nothing in it, and we can build the whole thing for you. Or on the contrary, if you are relocating from your current office or store, we can bring it back to the requested state by the owner or the real estate agent. So back to the skeleton and take care of everything for you. And do that in English if need be.
That's really cool. English or what other, how many other languages you speak, Blanca?
Well, five.
You must be Dutch, right? Whenever I meet anyone from the Netherlands, they say, oh, I speak just eight languages. No?
Yes, I don't speak Dutch, but I have a girlfriend who does.
Okay.
But we usually deal in English, but truth to be told, our company employs in general people from over 10 countries. So anything can be handled. There's barely any language that we don't speak in our company.
But so you're Czech, though, aren't you?
Yes.
That's very cool. So I've got a first question. I'm sure we'll have a few, but I've got a first question. So what kind of, like, where's the limit to the renovations that you do? Because we always keep talking, like, people contact us and they say, can this house be rebuilt? And we say no, but if you leave the concrete base in place, it's just officially a renovation. It's not a rebuild. So
yes, we just did that. We actually just did that. Our very first project was a complete renovation of an old residential house where the family lived there for about 25 to 30 years. And it was one of those really, you know, rundown houses. And we did
Matt's paying attention.
Yeah, Matt, we can do your Akias too.
So yeah, I'm sure.
Basically made it to look like a new house. We've gutted the whole thing, rebuilt positions of the kitchen, for example. We built the whole inside differently. So, you know, we gutted the whole thing and now it's a new house. They just have to still do the front, the facade. But
what does that mean for the regulations? I guess we talk a lot about the regulations. And so in Tokyo, just if anyone's watching, there's a certain width of road. If the road is too narrow, you're actually not allowed to rebuild. But if you're taking it down to the concrete, I think you have to leave one beam or something.
No, we didn't take down the house itself, but we basically stripped everything from the inside.
Yes.
We left the outside and we just gutted the inside.
Do you need to actually submit something to the ward office that you're going to do that?
No, not for that.
Interesting.
Not for that. This one was a house standing on its own. Sometimes when we, like, our next project or one of our next projects is to do the same, but with a mansion in Tokyo. Okay. So over there at that point, you have to submit the plans and it has to be submitted to the, to the mansion kind of like a committee, even though the people that are ordering the renovations are owners, but because it's a mansion, it has to be submitted and then you have some regulations. But
and then they need to also approve the dates and times you're going to be working and all that sort of stuff, right?
Yes, not only that, but they have some things that you are not allowed to touch.
That sounds like such a pain.
and things like that. So you do have to, when it's a mansion, you do have to inform inform the company, that the management company, that that's what you plan to do? They look at it and then they tell you, yes, you can, you cannot. So kind of, so you don't also interrupt the structure of the mansion. But with self-standing buildings, as long as you are not tearing it down and building new one, you actually do not need, you don't need to apply. And we do not build from scratch. We renovate.
Mm, so you're knocking down kind of, as well, knocking down kind of cosmetic walls is addition. That's good. I'm curious what kind, can I ask a question?
Of course you can.
No, you don't get to ask a question.
there was one place that comes to mind out in Akiya, out in Sagamihara, near Fujino, actually. And it was a relatively new build too. It wasn't kind of a rundown Akiya. And the thing, it was one of these just exceedingly frustrating buildings, because from the outside, it wasn't awful. I mean, it was really pretty much a box. So like, so far as, you know, looking interesting, probably not, but I wouldn't call it an eyesore. But then I got on the, we got into the interior, and we had the floor plans prior to this. So we had an idea of what to expect, but, you know, looking at floor plans and actually getting in there and seeing what the floor plan looks like in actuality are two different things. And this place was it was almost entirely diagonals, including entry rooms with shoji. So like, you would get the bedroom specifically had two shoji that intersected at the corner, right?
Yeah.
Which was odd. And there were a number of other, like there was a designated kids space that was right next to like the bannerless stairway and just a bunch of really wacky things that were just, oh my goodness, who designed this? So I'm curious, like, are you, when you're doing the renovations that you're talking, that you do, are you renovating kind of more typical, like, okay, this makes sense, but you just want to renovate it structures? Or are you getting in there and like almost being like a medical doctor and saying,
right, oh, now, oh,
we need to excise this?
Yes, that's, for example, what we are doing right now. I'm going through a plan right now where we actually need to do a lot of medical, you know, cuts and adjustments and stuff, you know.
Awesome.
implant new organs, and all that stuff. You know, everybody is different. We try to work with the customer because, of course, you know what, my ideas are different. Our Japanese managers and staff ideas are different, and the customer's ideas are different. So we kind of try to put it together. So most importantly, they like it. Mm-hmm. Because it's not going to help if I like it, or, you know, our company likes it, if the customer doesn't feel comfortable in it. But, you know, with walls, we do realize there's a lot of walls that, or like rooms that are made small or were built small, but right now people do not want that. So when they ask us, you know, can you knock this down, or can you move that wall, can you do this, then, you know, we bring our engineer there, he checks for the structure, what can be knocked down, what you know, how it can be changed, so it's more of a modern or nicer style, because the older Japanese houses or apartments, they do have a lot of unnecessary walls that create a small cubicles, and nowadays nobody likes that.
What's your background, Blanca? How did you get into this kind of work?
I don't have that background at all. You know, as I said, it's funny because I'm creative myself, and we did a bunch of our house renovations ourselves. We basically did everything ourselves. We only got a reform company for the bathroom, because that ended up being a little bit too big of a job for me. But we've done a bunch of things ourselves, and my background is actually more of a finance and marketing.
Okay.
So I'm not a builder at all.
We met because Blanca was also doing short-term rentals back in the day. So that's how long we've known each other.
We used to do short-term. We are business people. So
entrepreneur, yeah.
Yes. So I've met Tracy when we were doing short-term rentals in Tokyo. We used to own a hotel facility in Prague, in Czech Republic, some time ago. But we came into it for the business opportunity, because we saw... we had the business partner who is in the industry for, I think, 15 years now. So he is very experienced and he wanted to cooperate with us. So, and we wanted a service that does not forget about the foreign community. So we are kind of bringing more of the knowledge of the foreign community. We are bringing our side from, you know, how to run the business. And he brought in the knowledge of how the Japanese side of real estate works.
Well, Blanca, that's great to hear. Yeah. That's very similar to how our business with Aki and Inaka started. But generally speaking, I'm also just really kind of over the moon with initiatives, efforts, new companies and things like that, that do kind of say, hey, you know what? We're not all real estate agents or engineers, or a lot of these companies just tend to be very, very siloed, which of course, you know, has its benefits. But at the same time, when it comes down to, like you said, finance, marketing, PR, promotion, like the other sides of business, often enough, there are things that end up coming up short. And so hearing that you have, you know, you and your business partners kind of saw, okay, yeah, we're not, you know, we're not the renovators, but we do see that there's a market here that isn't being served for this, that, and the other reason. Yeah. We think we can address that if we work with this partner. Yeah. That's awesome. So good work.
Thank you. Yeah, you know, my husband's been in the business in Japan for 30 years. So he's also not Japanese originally. He has Japanese passport now. But he's been here 30 years and he's been running business here for 30 years. And so we just saw an opportunity there and a gap that can be filled and should be filled. So we wanted to fill it.
Awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So tell me, what do you do about things like, you know, insulation? One of the biggest things that houses, especially, you know, 20, 30 year old houses here have is the insulation issues. And that's a lot of the reasons why the rooms were so small was because people would only heat you know, single rooms. How easy is it? Have you found to actually retrofit some decent insulation? And how much of a difference does it make to things like ongoing costs of you know, heating and cooling, etc.? Are there anything new technology that can be employed in these old houses to make them more, you know, more efficient?
To be honest, we have not done that yet. Like the whole, you know, like as the Czech person, what we do, we basically put insulation on all the walls before you put the plaster and you put the wallpaper. And here in Japan, they don't really want that. We have not had a client yet that would actually request for that, because they simply don't want that. They would tell you, okay, they would now use a better system of windows. And more focus on so the air doesn't go through the windows as it used to. But I am yet to meet a client that would actually want to insulate the house both from either the inside or on the outside. Because in Europe, when it's really cold, we have double insulations on houses.
Do you think it would make sense to have like insulation education seminars?
Yes.
Over the course of a year, you can save this much money just by spending this much.
They can do that. When we were renovating our house, the renovation company did mention that they can do that. So they can actually insulate the wall, but they just gently steered us away from that and towards the double pane, triple pane windows, just saying, oh, it's just gonna cost too much for a house this old. Yep. It's not worth it.
Yeah, so I am yet to meet a client that would want that. So when I meet one, Tracy, I will get back to you.
Okay. Well, I mean, I just noticed, I mean, we've now clicked over into April where, you know, they have just announced that, you know, that electricity bills are going up for everybody. And, you know, Japanese traditionally have not really been very focused on, you know, keeping electricity costs down. It's just like, you need heat, let's just put a high, you know, like a reverse cycle air conditioner, which is so inefficient. And it uses up so much power. But, you know, is this something that could, you know, could be at the head of the curve of renovating houses?
Yeah, I think it will be something people will want to start addressing, how to actually preserve heat and create those. So as Matt said, maybe we should start doing education for people.
I like the idea of, as much as I'm honest, outside of business, like I'm very much not interested in insulation.
It's very important because right now, you know, we just got out of winter, so it was cold. But we are at the stage that right now you do not have to use a cooler, you don't have to use heater, but the cooling season is coming soon. We're going to be so hot. And so now people are going to start using air conditioning, and it's going to, you know, that's going to be a big cost again. So I think it's actually worth to address
how to plan
the house.
And also, because those are one of the things that I think about in a manner, not so much of, oh boy, you know, sales, but like these are things that just kind of should be done. And if there was a larger, I don't know, or a mindset that it was more strongly attuned to or accepting of, you know, standard insulation practices, that would benefit like just most of the country, yeah. I would say.
Yeah.
Sales processes, obviously energy production. I don't know, maybe a few less people would die of exposure because these things all come to mind when.
How many people die in their sleep in winter because it's just so cold?
No, legit. Like up north, I used to live in, think about this, up north, yeah. I used to live in Iwate, right? Those things, it went down to like minus 25 in winter.
Wow.
I distinctly remember what I would do. I had single pane windows, right? I would literally take some saran wrap and duct tape, right? And make a pocket in my windows and then stuff that with the 7-Eleven plastic bags that I got in order to create insulation, right?
Oh my goodness.
Now, I think that is like the next kind of, steps people will have to take in Japan to think, because you know nobody's been worried about it till now, but with the prices going up so significantly, you have to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I have to think about, like, you know, utility costs, because you know, in my houses, I've got, you know, short-term rentals, the utility bills, you have to really budget at least double what the average domestic use would be, and you've got to really build that into your costs. And so with this, my bills are going to go really high. The reason is that you know, if anyone's looking at getting into short-term rentals, is that the guests, you know, they're not really focused on the domestic living side of it. They just want to go and live their life and do what they're doing, and they don't remember to turn off lights because they're not paying the bills, so they don't remember to turn off lights or
it's like
turn off air conditioners.
You are not worried about turning off the air conditioner or, you know, putting off the light. You do that if you are brought up that way. So putting off the lights is kind of in your nature.
Mm.
Yes. Then you do it automatically. But a lot of people's actually not used to that. So then, you know, the lights are on all the time. Mm. I saw that we had our rental only for, I think, like 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw that it would drive me crazy.
Yeah,
how do you for a whole day and you don't turn off your air condition? Like, why?
Well, it's just because the focus is really getting out the door and where am I going for the day and what am I doing, and so really it's just a, you know, going through the motions of the turning off all the lights and turning off the air conditioners is not high on the priority list. So, I mean, we try to give people grace about that because it's nothing we can do about it. But, you know, oh, this insulation, it would make such a difference.
It's actually an interesting thing. I'm going to make a note and I'm going to discuss it at the next company meeting.
Well, I mean, you can use it as a sales point, right? Especially if you made an agreement with like a vendor of insulation products, and you know, you could use it as an upsell. Oh, here's me. Yeah. Use it as an upsell.
Great idea. I'm actually going to use that.
But my concern, let's stick on, this is actually very interesting. My concern would be, though, that because it kind of reminds me of the shrinkflation thing of, oh, the boxes are getting smaller, but the price is the same and everybody just kind of eats it and doesn't do anything about it. And so the thing that worries me is prices go up, people just kind of say, well, you know,
that's what it costs.
So, but that would be
shrinkflation. I've never heard of that before.
No.
Really?
Shrinkflation, that's a new one on me. I know this has happened with butter, right? Butter,
yeah. Yeah. Anything.
And too. But so my concern is if the insulation thing were to be, you know, on the news and, you know, Japan time or whatever, like kind of just public news, yeah, it might not take off. But if you wanted to get, you know, in early and, you know, get some early wins that weren't kind of low hanging fruit, well, wouldn't the short-term market, short-term rental market, not be a bad place to start? Because I would
have landlords would have an interest in reducing those bills. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, definitely. You know, I think what happens in Japan is, you know, unfortunately, Japanese have that shogunai mentality.
Mm-mm-mm.
So you know, so they're gonna be like, you know, shogunai ne. But
Go ahead. Sorry.
Then they will not, for example, put on aircon even in the highest heat, and that's when everybody is getting heat stroke.
Yeah.
Heat stroke.
Yeah.
And or in the winter, on the contrary, then they use alternative forms of heating up the house and end up burning up the house.
Yes. Yeah. Again, with all of the kerosene,
choking on petrol fumes. Yeah.
That burned their house in October. It was not even that hot yet. So, the Japanese, with the older Japanese, it might not have an effect, but with the younger Japanese, you can actually appeal to them. And then it all comes to the point of marketing. How do you sell it? Mm-hmm. And yes, if you can start with, let's say, short-term rentals, or any, you know, then you can start with offices, because offices are having the issues. You know, you have to, I am yet to explain to people in Japan that no, the lights in offices do not need to stay on at night.
Yeah.
You know,
it's just
one. But then it looks like the company is busy and everyone's working.
We interrupt this broadcast. I always wanted to say this. We interrupt this broadcast to tell you about Tokyo Family Stays. They're a short-term rentals company in Tokyo, and they offer a home away from home experience, which is just perfect for remote working, quarantining, or if you just need summer quiet to hide away from the world. So they offer a variety of options for families, for corporate relocations, or simply if you're transitioning between homes in Tokyo. Now, the properties are super comfortable, tastefully furnished, fully equipped with all amenities, and they accommodate up to 10 people. So really the only thing you'll need to bring with you is your toothbrush and maybe a change of clothes. They've got fast, unlimited wireless internet, dedicated workspaces, and fully equipped kitchens, and they're just a delight to stay in, a fantastic alternative to Japanese business hotels, which if you've ever stayed in one, you probably know they're tiny, they're noisy, fine for a night or two if you're on your own, but long-term or with a family, you'll probably feel you're in a jail cell very quickly. So if you want to give yourself a sense of space and freedom by renting a real home with comfortable Western beds, including all the necessities like baby bedding, children's toys, high chairs, you definitely want to reach out to Tokyo Family Stays. They've been at it for over a decade. They're a fully licensed minpaku or short-term stay operator. And as a special bonus for our viewers and listeners, they're also throwing in a breakfast basket upon arrival for anyone who books and mentions the Japan Real Estate Podcast or NTI. And not only for guests, if you're a property owner, you've got an investment property that you want to tweak for higher profits, or a holiday home that you want rented out when not in use via short-term stays, drop them a line today. See how they can help you maximize your property's income. And again, as a special bonus to our viewers and listeners, they're also offering a free audit of your existing short-term stay listings without any obligation whatsoever. So feel free to reach out to them at tokyofamilystays.com. Well worth your visit. And again, if you're in the market for a family home in or around the Tokyo metropolitan area, Emil's your man. Don't be shy to reach out to him as well at emil.gorgies, G-O-R-G-E-E-S, at tokyorealty.jp.
Hey, Blanca, a quick question. Tracy and I had a chat about a year ago, I think, about potentially renovating an apartment building with small individual one-room units into something that would be more profitable for short-term stays, so like two or three LDK and so forth. And we were wondering, I think we sort of made some assumptions, but I'm not sure how correct we were. How much more expensive is it if you need to do that kind of work with a concrete structure as opposed to a wooden structure?
Yeah, that's a it is much more expensive because the concrete structure is more difficult to break, more for the walls. It's more
to get rid of, right?
Then to get rid of course. And right now the cost of garbage disposal went up again. Yeah, so that is also another cost. And then even if you are not destroying all the walls, if you just want to do something with it, or even we were installing window shutters on windows where the wall was concrete, it takes much more time and more manpower to do that. So yes, the cost is much more when it's a concrete business, a concrete building. Of course, the building is better because you have bigger durability and it's safer when it comes to earthquake. But when you do a reconstruction or renovations or for concrete building, the price goes up significantly.
Is there like a ballpark figure? Can we say it's going to be double or triple or 50% more, roughly? Or not more than double the price? Or
I would not say not more than double the price, because I am at this point, I don't know how much the garbage went up. Yeah. And it also depends on the area. I know Tokyo and Chiba went up when it comes to garbage.
So it's interesting. Garbage disposal is something that I'm rather interested in because we deal with Akio, right?
Yeah.
But it was funny because, so whenever I hear that word, I just immediately think, oh, like chairs and just personal effects and, you know, closets of clothes. And
about 2 tons of concrete.
Right. And so it took me a second to click like, oh, wait, no, you're talking about rubble. You're talking about demo disposal.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. The rubble for a concrete house, if you were to demolish a concrete house, and I know this because we've done the numbers on demolishing a concrete house versus demolishing a non-concrete house. Demolishing a concrete two-story house would come up, including the manpower and removing the rubble and everything, to about 9 million yen.
Yeah, it sounds about right.
Whereas if you do that with a normal house, you are looking at
2-3 or what, right?
2-3.
That's what we've received estimates for.
Yeah, I paid 3 for mine, for my demo.
Yeah. So you would do that. So you are looking at basically triple.
So somewhere between double to triple the price for any kind of concrete work, right?
Yeah. Okay.
And it depends, like, if it's just like the outside walls are concrete or if everything is concrete.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I've seen some good renos, Ziv, where there's been, you know, a concrete structure on the outside, but the inside walls are, you know, normal wood and plaster, drywall. And
they're okay.
And that you can convert like a, you know, two rooms into one. So, you know, Blanca, why I say this is that, you know, as well, is that when you're doing short-term rentals, you get more money per square foot doing a two-bedroom or a three-bedroom than you would three small apartments.
Of course.
Because there's so many small single apartments in Japan. The price per night that you can charge is way less than
the management overhead too, right?
Yeah, the same floor space, but as a two or three bedroom. And especially if you're converting something that's a three, like maybe something that's like 3 1Ks, you convert that to like a two bedroom with two bathrooms. There's not a lot of places that have two bathrooms.
Yeah.
So you could, again, charge more per night for that.
You remember we had this issue before the Olympics when I was looking for the units and for the clients for Olympic Games. And basically their biggest problem was that there were units with multiple bedrooms, but always only one bathroom, and they never want that, because they are like, no, the people need to move around the same time in the morning. They cannot be relying on one bathroom morning and
so we're a family of three, and it's an issue. I can't imagine a family of six or seven traveling.
Yeah, or people that, you know, kind of travel together but are not really related, so you can't even enter each other's bathroom.
Yeah.
So like working groups or so.
But what is also very good in Tokyo right now is when you are already renovating a short-term rental space, if you can make it a picture perfect, picture pretty, then use it for a few hours as a photo shoot rental space, then you make much more money than actually for the rental. We just paid 60,000 yen for 3 hours for a rental space for branding photo shoot. So,
ooh,
yeah, because it was a pretty space. We really liked it. We wanted that space because we needed an indoor space for a branding photo shoot. And this one was that, and then the price was like, yeah, 56,000, I think, 56,000 for 3 hours.
We do that down here in Yugawara, but it's 10,000 yen an hour and with goats.
With goats?
Look at our website. I'm not joking.
No, you know what? But the problem
branded pictures with goats without them.
Depending on the product, that would work very well for something.
Yeah, but my husband would leave with your goats. You really want a goat. But
no, you're totally right. The rental space for photo shoots is an outstanding. A lot of my photographer friends talk about this all the time. There's really good money in that.
Yes.
Well, how do I get a piece of this action, guys?
On the get listed on the
Spacey.
I'll send you through who I rent. I don't remember the website of that. I can send you through whom I rent. Got it. What was it? My space or something like that.
Spacey, I think it is.
No. It was not Spacey. I can look it up. I can look up the link and send it to you.
Get it,
then put your pictures. And
it's funny because actual event space is not as expensive as that. Like, I'm just looking into a few event spaces and, you know, they might be 1,000 a day, but you get, you know, the whole 9 or 10 hours or whatever you need.
No, but this one, literally because it was really, really pretty, really well done, you know, like light, a lot of light, big windows. So great, really good for photo shoots. So specifically when you are listing your space for that, you can choose, you choose what people can do there. If it's a meeting room, like work from home, you of course don't charge as much. But if it's for a photo shoot, and you have that kind of space, then you charge premium.
It's a very boutique kind of experience.
Yeah.
Like, because most event spaces, like, as long as you got the money, come on in. But a lot of these kind of smaller, you know, Airbnbs that are remodeled as, like, we're talking about photo shoot spots, they can be kind of picky. And they can also have a very specific use case, right? It's not just, you know, we'll rearrange the chairs for you and you can do whatever.
No, hold on. You have to clean after yourself. You have to put it into original condition, because if I wanted them to clean for me, their cleaning charge was 12,000 yen. I was like, are you kidding me?
They got a great business.
We're in the wrong business, guys.
Tracy, I think you could actually easily got in there.
Yes, I have to look at all these other alternatives. There's another corporate relocations working from home company that's really making a lot of noise lately, and I've been with them, so I've had a few bookings with them. That's quite good. So
yeah,
that's an interesting but you know, home rentals is just not popular domestically at all. So I'm still waiting for the borders to open. It's quite sad. So
Something's happening. We got our first relocation clients for the new company just now. The people are slowly starting to move.
I got my first one like 2 days ago. So I was falling over for myself. I was so excited to welcome them off the plane. It was,
welcome back. Welcome back.
I know.
One, guys, like, don't get that excited. Don't.
It's been a long couple of years, Matt.
It has been a long, long couple of years. So, yeah.
Mm. For everybody, hospitality, I can't even.
No, it's been grim. It's been very, very grim.
Oh.
Yeah. And so you had your first relocation, Zim?
The new company, yes. So the company that we do that helps investors buy into Japanese businesses and franchisees setting up shops, and then relocation for, I mean, they're eligible for a business management visa in those cases, and then they need help relocating.
That's a really great business, Ziv. How's it going?
The franchise side of things is going really well. We're not advertising it yet because we're just about to open the first shop for our first customer. Once he starts reeling in the income, then we'll know that it all works and we'll start advertising. But the relocation, we were kind of like preparing the infrastructure and just like waiting for people to come in. But they're now starting to come in. So good stuff.
And
also Fukuoka and Saga Prefecture. Sorry?
Only coming into Fukuoka or anywhere?
The relocation side of things is very hands-on. So we're starting that from Kyushu before we're going to start outsourcing it to other parts of the country. We want to get our feet under us properly. But Kyushu is opening up to international students, business travelers. And now Fukuoka and Saga prefectures have notified that they're going to be accepting Ukrainian refugees too. Happily volunteered to provide relocation support free of charge to them, because they need it and we need the promotion.
Of course.
And when?
That's very unusual to have. Like, normally Japan takes, what, two refugees?
I know, right? I was shocked when I heard that.
Yeah.
Well, they took Bente, didn't they?
So yeah, they took two refugees in last year. Two.
Yeah.
Strangely enough, apparently where I lived in Iwate, in Miyako City, is hosting a Ukrainian refugee.
Not even a family. My goodness.
It might be. I know that there's at least one. It sounded like one guy. I'm not sure specifically, but when I mentioned this to, I was like, oh my God, wow, Miyako's stepping up to the plate. Everybody else, though, just said immediately, like, in Miyako, like, poor guy.
You know, it's weird that Emil's not here today, so we can segue into stuff that's not real estate. It's weird that, like, with all of the abandoned villages and declining rural population and stuff, that would be the perfect solution for Japan to, like, bring refugees in, or you know, just people relocating, make it a bit easier for them and just send them to rural areas to repopulate the place. That's what Australia does. Work wonders for Australia.
I think that's where that's definitely kind of where our part of our business is heading. We've definitely seen an uptick in international investors as well as organizational investors. There's definitely things moving, definitely interest, even if they haven't come on board as clients. You know, we're keeping track of kind of the general trends in interest. It does seem to be gaining traction. The problem, though, and I mean, this is the perennial problem that we have to deal with, is there still isn't enough accurate or granular details and information about the process, about the reality on the ground, about the price. I mean, about all of the things that we have to wrangle and say, hold up, not $500, we're like 50,000, but it's still cheap.
Yeah.
But when you say investors, what are they investing in?
Well, obviously they're buying the houses, but usually starting up more businesses focused. There's a lot of interest in Airbnb. There's still a lot of interest in kind of wellness related subjects. Yoga and hiking and climbing are kind of the big three. There's a really, I don't want to talk about that one. That one probably won't work. there's still a smattering of people coming in. But it seems to be growing, and I'm not one to be overly optimistic, so I won't say I'm overly optimistic, but I do get kind of a good sense that there's going to be a bit of a breaking point sometime soon in the the style or manner or like mindset behind investment, such as what you were talking about with Australia and just saying, right, you know, like Nikko right now, for example, is totally rotting. And most people in Japan, domestic, are not buying that place up, but we're starting to get people who are saying, hey, we've heard about Nikko. Can you dig around in there? And there are viable properties up there. So it's really a matter of being able to, again, I mean, this is the work that we do, being able to determine, oh, you said you want this? Okay, let's find out if that's possible. If so, then we can move on.
But my question is, if you create a village of, an enclave in the middle of, in Inaka, mm-hmm. what are the you know, what are the other things that people are going to do? You know, what jobs are going to pick? I mean, yes, there's obviously all of the jobs that need to sustain the people in the area, but there needs to be additional commerce to support that.
Yeah.
What do you see as the draw card? I mean,
there really need to be, for lack of a better word, like Sherpas, right?
Sherpas.
Yeah, like, okay, you've got a group of five people or whatever who want to invest in a village and, you know, build it up into an eco-sustainable blah, 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 with pickles and beer, craft beer, and ice. That's cool and all, right? It is doable, but the fact is it's much more complicated than just getting a house, outfitting it with pickling equipment or whatever, and going about your business.
That conversation we had before. You have to market the entire area, not just your little project.
Right? And so having people on the ground, preferably who are long-term members of that particular community, who are able to, you know, hold hands, make introductions, and honestly, like, not live in, but, you know, be on call as the guide, really. Something that is extremely valuable.
I mean, look, I do know that there's some industries that really are needing people and needing new blood. And that's, you know, I know someone who specifically looks after sake breweries and the sake masters. And she actually knows a couple of different breweries, and there's no one to take over the business. Like, it's traditionally family businesses, and they, you know, the technology is shared from the master down, but no one's interested in taking over that job, and people are actively looking for someone who wants to come in and do this work. And
I'm sorry for really smiling, hard. But can you imagine a Japanese G-san buying Nihonshu that was produced by Ukrainian refugees trained in the Japanese way out in the countryside?
Forget about that, though. Market it internationally.
That would work.
But also there's a whole bunch of other peripheral businesses that you can do as well. Like, you know, you could be bringing in people to learn and then, export that technology out. I mean, there's a whole bunch of stuff.
Specifically with regards to the sake thing, an acquaintance of mine in Seattle, Washington, he runs the Tahoma Fuji Sake Brewing Company. And he learned, I forget where he was. It might have been in Kofu. Anyway, he trained for a number of years. Was an apprentice at a sake factory, like a traditional one, took all those learnings, he's from Seattle, moved back there, imported the equipment, right? And set up literally in his garage, right? In that sense, I guess it's homebrew. But it's
Moonshine City, yeah.
Moonshine.
Yeah, Moonshine City, right? But he's licensed in all of these things. And I can imagine him being interested in that kind of stuff, or maybe there's a tourism element of, hey, come with me.
Sure,
and
tourism element.
Definitely the demand for it, I think.
These places are, often the places are made in very remote areas because of the water quality or, the quality of the rice that they use. I mean, I don't know. I mean, you can really market whatever, spin anything you like. And anyone will, like, if it tastes half good, people will buy it.
Actually, I got to run because the local Mekan master just came by. So.
Well, there's a Mekan master?
This is Yuga Water. There's like multiple Mekan masters.
That's amazing. Yeah. Well, yeah, when can
Blanca, we just before we wrap off, I got one more question just in regards to this. Do you also do commercial renovations? Like if someone's got an old house and they want to set up a beer or a sake brewery or stuff like that? Yeah. Kitchen for a restaurant,
yeah, we do everything. We do everything, so we are very flexible with that. Yep. We can build up any business out of property you need.
That's so fantastic. So you're going to give us your website, your social. Is that a Mekan?
No,
no. That's a mushroom.
It's a
gigantic local shiitake.
Oh.
Absolutely. Oh, I'll give you my details.
Yes, please.
And anytime. You know, what we do usually, we set up a meeting at the property with the client. We go, we look there, and they tell us what is their expectations or what they want to do with the space. And then we'll tell you about approximately how long it it's going to take, because that's also one of the first factors people need to know when they are deciding.
And is how not much it's going to cost.
Price, but the time frame. The price comes later because, depending on the material you want to use and stuff like that. But the time frame is also very important because not always are people willing, for example, to live in a half renovated house, or people have a time frame that they want to start a business and need to have it specific. So the time frame is actually one of the very first things that we can tell you when we can start and how quickly we can finish. And then, of course, then we talk about price, because different materials are different price ranges. So,
but
we do businesses.
And you've mentioned that you don't do builds and rebuilds, but are you maybe partnered with companies that can do that, with you managing as a bilingual project manager? Or
not yet, to be honest. Okay. It's one of the things we do have in a plan for the future as our portfolio, because when we plan, we plan those things as a next step, but we do not build from scratch for now.
Okay, perfect. So thank you very much for coming on. Yes, goodbye, Matt. Goodbye.
Bye, Matt. Bye, Matt. So Blanca, Emil is normally here, and so we should have you back when Emil's on, because he Emil is our local domestic residential expert. So he sells only in Tokyo, and he sells either new properties or
family homes,
secondhand properties. Yeah. Sorry,
family home, nice fancy family home. Oh, fancy. I mean, nice family homes.
Yeah. So but he has a whole real estate company machine in his orbit, so I'm sure he's got a lot of renovation questions that would be really useful to people who are watching this. So
I wouldn't mind expanding the panel. I mean, I don't know how available you are normally, Blanca, but it would be great to have like a renovation expert on hand that we can actually talk to, because we constantly ask these kinds of questions.
Mostly Wednesdays are actually mostly free for me for now.
Yeah.
So
awesome.
Thanks.
Okay. Well, I will stop the broadcast now, and I'm going to stay on for a little bit. So
thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. So that was, again, Blanca Kobayashi, Vice President and Co-Founder of ARC Reform, a bilingual renovation and home design company based in Tokyo, Japan. And if you've got any questions for Blanca or any other member of the panel about renovations, repairs, redesign, or any other topic that we regularly banter about, please send them our way. Or if you'd like to come on the show and have a chat with us live, recorded, not live, we're more than happy to have you. Don't be shy to reach out. Now, before we go, we're also, as always, going to tell you and also link to our other sponsor's website. That's Hiroshi Shimizu, immigration lawyer and administrative scrivener. If you're thinking about moving here on a more permanent basis, or you're already in Japan on some sort of a temporary visa and you want to switch to a longer term or permanent one, or if you're considering setting up a local company or a branch office of a foreign company and you've got any sort of business or visa-related inquiries, or even if you just want to find out what your options are on any of these topics, feel free to contact Hiroshi Shimizu. You can find him at japanimmigrationexperts.com, and he can help you set up a company, apply for any kind of visa, or just provide you with the best advice and extremely affordable consultation related to these topics. And he's already done that for many of our listeners. So feel free to reach out to him. Again, that's japanimmigrationexperts.com, and you'll be well on your way. And that's it from us for today, folks. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Japan Real Estate Podcast. Do share it with your networks, and please let us know what you think. So leave us a short rating or review on the iTunes Store, on Spotify, or just drop us a line in the comment section of wherever you might have found this episode. We love hearing from you. Hope to have you with us again next time. And until then, have a great day or night ahead. Yoroshiku.